And now, as promised, Tim Healy is with us for a few minutes. The longtime voice of Arizona State Athletics, man about town, also a Penn State guy. So I'm curious, let's just start there. Were you looking at the CFP saying, what if? What if the Devils met my Nittany Lions?
What if you're darn tootin'. You know, and I have to say, what if my Devils met my Nittany Lions?
Well, there you go.
Mean, it was, I've actually, let's see, I broadcast an Arizona State Penn State basketball game my second year as the radio voice in December of 1999. It was Eddie House's senior year, and ASU played Penn State in the championship game of the, I don't know if you remember, Brad, they used to have a holiday tournament. It had more names than I can remember. You know, but it was a Christmas time, like right, like usually the week between Christmas and New Year's. It was actually, I always enjoyed it. You know, they always got decent teams out here. Heck, one year we had Texas and Michigan in that tournament, but it Penn State and ASU played in the championship game of the 99 tournament, and Eddie went off for, I think it was 42 points or something like that, 42 or 46, but he had a 40-point game. And Penn State, you might recall, the Crispin brothers, John and Joe Crispin, were on that team. And that was a good team Penn State had. Jerry Dunn was their head coach. 2 years later, they were in the Sweet 16. And ASU beat them, I think it was something like 93-85, but a high-scoring game. But that was my first opportunity to do an ASU versus Penn State event. The only other I've had was when Pat Murphy was ASU baseball coach, he scheduled a three-game series against Penn State in, I think it was 2006, and I got to do all three of those games. But I was really, really looking forward to the chance to do a game in the playoff, because the way it would have shaken out is the only way they could have met would have been in the national championship game. And, you know, it was one, it would be one of those deals where I could probably say, Lord, you can take me now after the game, because I've seen everything, and I won't be terribly unhappy with the outcome. Although I'll be honest with you, I would be obviously pulling for the Sun Devils, because, A, they're my employer, but I think more importantly, you know, it would have been a first ever national championship appearance for Arizona State, and Penn State has a couple of natties in their trophy case. So, but yeah, that's a long winded way of saying, yeah, I was looking at that. I was thinking of that. And I had more than one person, several on our radio crew, to be exact, saying to me, you know, I would have loved to seen that, see what you would be like, who you'd be rooting for and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, who you're rooting for. I mean, it's obvious it's maroon and gold now, but it would have been fun. And to think how close they both were, Arizona State one play away from getting to the Final Four, and Penn State was a bad Drew Aller interception away, perhaps, from getting to the national championship game. So proud of both of them for as far as they went, and definitely a season to remember in football.
What you've had some time now to reflect, and when was it that you, not the broadcast booth, nobody, you said, you know, we're sitting here at this game, at this juncture, things, if the putt breaks right, you know, you're the voice of the team, and you're sitting there, and outwardly it's, things are great. Maybe they're not. You've always been fair and right down the middle. When things are good, they're good. When things are bad, they're bad. And I like that about you. A lot of guys, it's selling the sauce when you're down 50 to nothing. Like, it's not the ref's fault. Come on now. So when was the moment for you, Tim, that you felt like this could be a special season?
You know what? I would probably have to say, I mean, there were signs. I've compared the whole season to a snowball rolling down a hill, how it just gets bigger and bigger. And the achievements were just getting greater and greater as the season went on. And this was getting to be something special. But I don't really think I had that feeling until, I would say, maybe the Kansas State game in mid-November was the first sense that I had that, this might be pretty special. Because I'm trying to remember, I think the Devils' record was, I think it was 7-2 going into that K-State game in mid-November. And if you'll recall, Kansas State, they're a very good football team. They're a very good program. They were picked to finish in the top five of the Big 12, and they were one of the few teams in the Big 12 that was supposed to be good and ended up being good. And we had to go there in mid-November, where I think last year in a home game on a similar weekend, it snowed in Manhattan, and we were blessed with just terrific, crisp autumn weather, and we went back there. And by the way, a shout out to the Kansas State people. They were phenomenal when we were there that weekend. I can't tell you, Brad, how many people came up to me and my spotter, David Tan, as we were walking into the stadium. At least five or six people came up to us, saw that we had ASU gear on, and just said, "Welcome to K-State," or "Welcome to the Big 12. Great to have you here." And genuinely meant it. I mean, it was just really impressive. But that was a good team at their place in mid-November. And I was kind of wondering, is this going to be the game where, maybe a reality check steps in? And lo and behold, they got out to a 21 to nothing and then a 24 to nothing lead. And if you'll recall that game, Arizona State should have had a 31 to nothing lead. Jordan Tyson had a phenomenal game. And yet, late in the third quarter, up 24 zip, he catches a pass and is trying to get extra yardage, I think down inside the 25 or 20 yard line of K-State, and he fumbled. And the Wildcats recovered, and they end up getting a touchdown. And then they got another touchdown, and they threatened to make the game close. But the Devils prevailed and won 24-14. But I think winning that game and dominating it for most of the way as they did, that told me, man, this is pretty special. And then the next week, they get BYU at home. On the plane ride home from Manhattan, we're all watching the BYU Kansas game that night. And Kansas ends up handing the Cougars their first loss of the season. And that's when you start thinking th things are starting to really, the dominoes are starting to fall here. And then the next week, ASU hosted BYU, great crowd, beautiful day. Another game where they got a big lead and held on, but they did hold on to win. And then, dismantled Arizona in the rivalry game. And then, just so impressive with how they performed in the Big 12 championship game against Iowa State. But yeah, I'd say that Kansas State game might have been the first time I really thought this might be more than just a nice season. This might be a special season.
Tim Healy with us, longtime voice of the Sun Devils after a great season here on the Arizona Media Podcast. Excuse me, for a few minutes. I found this team to be very embraceable. And, you look at kids and through the years, you were there, obviously, with Jake's team. I saw a lot of similarities with Jake's team. We spent a lot of time with Jake, took him to the College Football Hall of Fame and all that, with Gus Farwell. And we get out of a cab and there's Terry Battle and they just man hug each other for a good minute. There was something about that team that I think this team, even if they didn't go as far as they did, just felt to me like, and I'm not in there like you are, but it felt to me like the camaraderie of this group was very embraceable and one of the closer teams that I've seen.
I would agree with you on that. If you may recall the quote, Brad, when the late Bruce Snyder coaching that 96 team, remember he always used to say that team was a team of character who had char or characters who had character, I think is the way, or something along those lines. I would not be uncomfortable using that same phrase about the 2024 Sun Devil team. I'm not sure about if the characters were perhaps as wild and crazy as some of those guys in 1996, but certainly Cam Scataboo would have fit in very well with that bunch. Of course, the funny thing is, I went to the ASU played a basketball game in Atlanta against Florida 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks before the Peach Bowl. So I got a little bit of a preview trip to Atlanta, and I went and toured the College Hall of Fame on that weekend. We were there for basketball, and I took several photos of the displays where they had old leather helmets with no face masks. And I felt like posting those. There's Cam Scataboo's helmet right there, because he would have fit in that day and age as a throwback player. And I think he would have fit in magnificently on that 96 team. But it was a team that they had some interesting characters, but they also, I think, showed a lot of character with their resiliency throughout the season, and just the way they fought and battled in games, and just got better and better as the season progressed. And they were, I think, very embraceable. You know, a lot of guys, Sam Levitt, always an approachable kid, and I mean, in one season, this kid, it looks like he's got the stuff to be one of the all-time great quarterbacks at Arizona State. I thought it was great how, obviously, I'm broadcasting the game, so I didn't see it in live time, but at the Peach Bowl, apparently ABC showed a cutaway of Jake on the sideline right after Sam made his scramble down to about the 2 or 3 yard line in overtime to set up the Sun Devils touchdown that put them in the lead. Sadly, a short-lived lead, but that run reminded me so much of Jake's scramble for a touchdown against Ohio State in the 96 Rose Bowl. And I think Sam Levitt has the potential to accomplish things that will put him on a plateau with Jake Plummer, because he's got several years, hopefully. You never know in this day and age, NIL and all that stuff. But it looks like Sam's back next year, and he's got a chance to do great things here that will get him mentioned, I think, with the Jake Plummers and the Danny Whites. I would say, the two, probably the two greatest quarterbacks in the history of the program. Cam Scataboo was just, I mean, who wouldn't embrace that guy for his style of play and just a very engaging kind of personality to boot. The moment that cracked me up the most this season was at after the Oklahoma State game. Remember, that was the game where the Sun Devils and the Cowboys had to endure like an almost 3 hour delay because of a thunderstorm sighting at halftime in Stillwater. And I personally believe that might have been one of the subtle turning points of the season, because you weren't sure quite which way things were going to go as you headed into November. Oklahoma State, even though they hadn't won a game in conference, a lot of talent, a lot of talent on that team, and you thought they might have the makings for a late season comeback. As it turns out, they didn't. But and yet, that was a close game at halftime. I think Arizona State led like 21-14. I'm not sure. But in the second half, you wonder, what are they going to be like after that lengthy delay? And they came out and dominated after the game, or after halftime. But after the game, we were getting ready to get on the bus to go catch the charter, and they had some food out that you could grab and take with you on the bus. And Cam Scataboo was right there next to me, and he had one of those, you've seen those big oversized baseball caps of teams. He had one on, and he looked hilarious. And I just thought that was classic, because he had a typically great game in that contest. I think that was a game where he went over 100 yards rushing and receiving at Oklahoma State. But Xavion Alford, I thought, was one of the all-time great interviews. He was so good that, I think it became known that Kenny said during the season that Alford frequently gave the teams would talk to the team in the locker room before the game. He was that good, and just a very intelligent, thoughtful young man, well-spoken, and had himself a heck of a season, and waited a long time to play because he was one of those double transfers formerly at Texas and USC who didn't get a chance to play last season. I think your observation is accurate. It was a very, very embraceable team. A lot of the players, the coaching staff, great guys on the coaching staff. What a job Hines Ward did this year as the wide receivers coach. And Kenny himself, just always approachable, frequently speaks to the media. I've never seen a coach who is as quick to point the finger at himself when things don't go right as Kenny Dillingham has been. I mean, he is, you talk about accountability. When the boss is being that accountable, how can players and assistant coaches not be? He just leads by example in that regard. So yeah, this was, it's fun. You've got me kind of thinking about this 96 versus 24 comparison. And I think there, for those of us who live both seasons, there are a lot of wonderful similarities.
Yeah, it's interesting with Kenny. I'll just give a quick backstory. I run into Kenny. He'd been on the ground about 24, 48 hours. as hired as coach, and it's Pinnacle against Castile. My son is on Castile, was his final high school game. And Kenny's there only to see Deuce Robinson because he was trying to get in late to see him. And I walk over and at halftime and we chat for a few minutes, and the game ends and it's like 9:30. It's a playoff game. The game's at Castile. Pinnacle's got to drive all the way back up. And Kenny's still there. And I'm talking to some of the Castile coaches and some of the Pinnacle coaches, and Kenny's still there. And Kenny was one of the last ones to leave, Tim. And the dogged that I saw in him that night, and then I had him on about 6 months later. I like to do something after. What are the first 100 days are like? And I said, so what have you learned in the first 100 days? And he grabs this water bottle. This is live on the air, by the way. That it takes three signatures to get this water bottle approved. And two of the people don't even work here anymore. And I'm trying to get a piece of equipment, and it takes five signatures. And and he's going on and on and on and on. So and there was some stuff with media early where he wanted to restrict access. And I called Kent Summers. And I said, I think we should chat with him a little bit about where he is. He's not in Eugene. He's not in Tallahassee. He's not in Memphis. He's not down at Auburn anymore. And so Kent and I met up with him and Charlie Regal over at Zips and Scottsdale, and basically said, all you have to do here is win. You know, if you're going to restrict media, don't do that. And I think he's been almost over accommodating at times when you talk about how he answers every last question, and which is admirable. But I think there comes a point of he's got to go coach, or he's got to go recruit. And I feel like he's found his footing. And I'm curious, long setup from me to you, but I'm curious how you have found him, because you've seen the fire at the end of games where he's caught on a hot mic over things that shouldn't have happened, not once, but twice this year. Remember the road game?
Oh, yeah.
And how he is now comporting himself and I think coming into his own as a 34-year-old. Am I overstating it?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. It's, you have to step back and think for a moment what you just said. He's 34 years old. I mean, to put it in context, when I started broadcasting Arizona State sports on Channel 3 TV in the late 1980s, the head coach of the ASU football program was not even born yet. And would not be born for a couple of years. That's the kind of wow moment for me. You know, Kenny is 8 years younger than my youngest child. My son Joe is 42. And, you know, and you have to really think about that for a moment. What a meteoric rise he has had in the coaching profession. And it's well deserved because he has the coaching chops, as he has clearly proved really at every step of the way. Every school where he was offensive coordinator, Memphis, Auburn, Florida State, Oregon, all had great offenses. And at Arizona State, he's done the near impossible, taken a program that was in the depths in so many ways, not only back-to-back 3-9s, but, you know, staggered by the NCAA investigation. And in less than 2 years, has turned it into a Final Eight team in the college football playoff that stood toe-to-toe with the Texas team. Everybody felt like it was national championship material. And yeah, I think there's an evolution in the process for him. You know, he's evolving as a head coach. He's learning. And you know, like I said, he's so accountable. You know, I think he blames himself for not getting getting out of the call that there was on the field for defense, for the defensive squad on that last play the fourth down touchdown that Texas scored in the Peach Bowl. You know, he put the blame on himself. And I really, really admire that. I think, you know, he's learning, he's evolving, and he's doing so at a very fast pace. And like I said, I mean, he should be, if he's not the National Coach of the Year this year, he's certainly one of the top five candidates. And this is in the second year of his head coaching tenure, and his first ever head coaching job. So the sky's the limit, I think, for what he can achieve professionally. And the cool thing about him is that he shows early signs that he's not going to ever rest on laurels, and he's always going to be trying to get better at his job, and have coaches that continue to grow in their positions and help their players grow as well. So I'm really just very impressed with what I've seen from him.
Sorry about that. Do you like the riverboat gam? I refer to him as riverboat gambler, Kenny. Are there times where you and Jeff look at each other like he's going for it here? And early it was, wow, what's he doing? And now you get used to it. When I've covered riverboat gamblers, love it when it happens, love it when it doesn't. If he's going to go for it, you need to have it happen more times than not. And when it doesn't, people cannot bury him and say, what's he doing there going for it on fourth and one at his 30? Why the fake punt? And all that stuff goes with it. Do you like the riverboat gambler? Did that strike you guys this year?
Yeah, I think so. But there were moments, that we kind of, not sure if I would have gone for that there. I mean, but that's part of what makes sports so fun and fascinating. It's a real life drama, and fans and even broadcasters and writers and whatnot. You have your own opinions, you have your own thoughts. Maybe I wouldn't have gone for it there. He did. It didn't work, but next time maybe it will. I think in the main, you kind of like the idea of a guy that's going to be aggressive. I think the riverboat gambler thing in its ultimate state is basically a sign where a coach is saying, we are going to be aggressive. We're not going to sit back and hope the game comes to us. We're going to go out and try to take this game and win this game. And certainly when you get into fights and battles late in the season with, teams as good as, Iowa State and as good as Texas, and of course, had they held on fourth down, they would have played Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl last Friday. When you're playing really good teams like that, you can't sit back and hope the game comes to you. You have to be aggressive. And so I think overall, I would say I love that mindset. Yeah, there are times when I would probably err on the side of caution, but I know in baseball, I've always been. Yeah, I'm a big baseball fan, and obviously the voice of Sun Devil Baseball. But in the big leagues, it seems like a lot of managers. This is my sixth inning pitcher. This is my seventh inning guy. Here's my eighth inning guy, and I'm going to my closer in the ninth. And I'm the kind of guy, if my eighth inning guy just got three up, three down, struck out two, and threw nine pitches and got through the inning, I'm tempted to run him back out there for the ninth inning. And I don't know how much I would go by the book in instances like that. But as far as Kenny and his propensity to, roll the dice, if you will, overall, I think it's great. And I think our fans have warmed up to it. The fact that they won big this year and the fact that a lot of those gambles paid off certainly helps in that perception. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool to have a coach that's saying, yeah, we're going to be aggressive here at Arizona State. We're going to go for this thing.
I think when you were just talking there about baseball, and you mentioned this person off the top, Pat Murphy, this is way off of, I don't have any notes in front of me. This is just us just chopping it up. But we're not surprised that Pat Murphy is killing it, by the way, are we?
No, he was. I mean, he had great success at Arizona State, and that was such an amazing ride. I got to work with Murph. He came here in 1995. I became the radio voice of baseball in the 2000 baseball season. So I guess that would be 10 years, 2000 to 2009 with Murph. And what teams he had that, that 2007 to 10 run where they won the Pac-10 championship 4 straight years, was a pretty impressive run. 4 trips to Omaha in 6 years. Some great players that came through here, and I'm not the least bit surprised. Very happy for him, because he kind of paid his dues. I think, he managed in places like Eugene, Oregon, in one of those summer leagues, and I think and for the Padres farm team, I think in El Paso, and then eventually
Him,
took,
he's just fun. He's just fun. He's a good guy. You root for people. I think in sports, the personality side has just been pushed to the margins so much when it comes to like coaches, players are, they're doing their thing on their social and they're doing this and they're doing that. Very seldom do you have a guy like Murph who just walks up and says, "What the bleep?" It's just, before I get you out of here, the Big 12 for you as the voice of Arizona State, the transition, I'm sure you miss going to Pullman and miss going to Corvallis, miss going to Eugene. You're about to embark on a road trip that's not going to be very much fun in terms of travel, I think. It's West Virginia, Cincinnati, or something like that that's coming up.
Cincinnati, West Virginia. The
Yeah.
longest one, the longest road trip of the year. If I had to sum it up quickly, in basketball, for football trips are kind of easy. You take the charter, you go Friday, you come home right after the game. It doesn't matter where you're playing. That's how you do it. Basketball trips tend to be the longest. And what I've noticed is that in Big 12 hoops this year, the trips seem to be shorter in duration, but more frequent. In the Pac-12, we used to go every other weekend to Oregon State, and then 2 weeks later, UCLA, USC, or whatever it would be. And we generally travel every 10 days. We'd leave Wednesday, get home either late Saturday night or fly home Sunday morning. And then 10 days later, the Wednesday after next, on the road again. In the month of January this year, I will have been on the road at least part of every week in the month of January. And yet the interesting thing is that this coming Saturday and Sunday will be in Cincinnati on that road trip, and that's the only Saturday and Sunday this month that I won't be home. So a lot of the trips are like early in the week. Like last week, we went to Kansas, flew Tuesday, played Wednesday, came home Thursday. We have the Cincinnati, West Virginia extravaganza this week. Then the final week in January, a Monday trip to Boulder, play Colorado, come home Wednesday. And that's kind of the way it goes. So the trips are more frequent, but shorter in duration. We have one trip in mid-February where we're the one team in the Big 12 that has to play a road game on Super Bowl Sunday. We're at Oklahoma State that day, and then the team plays at Texas Tech Wednesday night following. And we're going to make two trips on that one. At least the support staff that I travel with, we're going coming back Sunday night after the Oklahoma State game, and then flying to Lubbock Tuesday night for a Wednesday game. But I'm kind of liking the shorter duration trips, but there are a lot of them, and a lot of them are going to pretty cold weather sites, and the temperatures are going to be frigid, especially I think Sunday in Cincinnati, and then the whole time we're in Morgantown. I don't know if it's going to get over 20 degrees.
Safe travels. I appreciate your time and chopping it up. Thanks.
Great to see you, Brad.
There's Tim Healy, and we're back with more after this timeout.